We are now in the Wetmore Summer Series. Who are we? This is Whole Life, a podcast of the Whole Life Church here in Orlando, Florida. And we, with our namesake, he's Wetmore. He was Wetmore on two Sundays ago. I don't know about last Sunday, did you, or yesterday, 2 days ago. Did you do the, I heard you were there.
I was there briefly. There was another church gathering over in the youth center that
I heard about that.
I went and participated in a little bit more, maybe than I helped get things set up a little bit for the watercolor painting and saw it. And there were over 60 people there.
Over 60 people. 61 registered. And the last, you guys killed it. If you're listening and you were there for that, we checked on Saturday because Heather's like, well, maybe nobody registered. We won't even have to go.
Well, I thought there'd be 15 to 20 people. That's what I thought.
So there was 29. And then Sunday morning, there was 39. And then by right before they left, so it would have been about 1 o'clock, there was 61. So you guys were like, hey, Sunday, what do I have to do? Hey, church event. And so you guys all showed up.
Yeah,
and
it was awesome.
It was cool.
And there are some incredible artists there.
And if you show up this week, they'll be on display.
And I know Heather is not necessarily one of our most faithful listeners to the podcast, but Heather, maybe Randy can convey to you.
We're still in the first few minutes. Maybe she hasn't fallen asleep yet.
Yeah. So Heather, thank you so much. She did such a great job teaching, getting it set up, having everything prepared and ready to go. Heather, you're amazing. Thank you so much. Had no idea there were 60 plus people in our church that would want to do watercolor painting on a Sunday afternoon. But I have learned, I have faith in you all now. I'm realizing that,
We have had some people reach out via social media and see if this was just a one-time thing. Was it going to be more often?
I think we do have an art small
fine
community.
Arts, yes.
Yeah, fine art small community.
Led by Peter.
Yeah.
Peter and Amanda.
And Amanda. I couldn't think of her name. So, and you can go to the events page. That's once a month.
That's a small community. And just go to our small communities page and check that out.
There's actually one coming up. I don't recall the day exactly, but we'll have an events page this week.
Do we also have a makers community? Does Harry?
Harry still does makers community.
Yeah.
And I want to say that's on a Sunday as well. If I remember correctly. A lot.
So all my creatives, there's stuff. If you had a good time doing that, just think about it. I mean, you can do that every month. Something like that anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think most of our groups, I believe, are every month.
Yeah.
And there's 28, I want to say, on the webpage.
Yeah.
So wholelife.church/communities. Go ahead and check it out and find something to do.
Become a part of a community.
I got stuck at home.
I don't want to lose track, but I think Heather said that we're going to actually have an art installation this Sabbath, right?
Yeah. All of the art on the clipboards. Everybody got their piece of paper and they got a clipboard, and as they started to work on it. So sometime this week, we're gonna put those up so that
where are they going to go? Are they going to go
lobby.
In the lobby?
Yeah, I think so.
So when people come in Saturday to church morning. On Saturday morning.
Yep.
They'll be able to see the art that was done this last week.
Yeah.
And then you should walk over right by the coffee bar on the wall. There's a slat wall, and all the small communities have little cards right there. You can scan a QR code to get involved. You can see what's available. Or just go to the webpage I just mentioned, and you can do it that way as well.
Yeah.
So there you go. So not only that, if you were here last week, Lucas, here's looking at you, buddy.
Yes.
Then you know that we had someone write in anonymously.
We survived.
We survived. They were a little afraid before. And then we're like, no, Amanda's going to be here. It's okay. We have smart people coming. We didn't just leave y'all in a lurch. So someone had written in that they were impressed that I knew the word homiletic. So anyway, I don't know who this person is. They have just said we'd prefer to remain the anonymous listener.
Yeah.
So they responded again this week after last little go around. Thank you for the mention of the podcast. I'm also glad you apparently knew the word homiletic.
Apparently.
That was not the full compliment.
There is an LOL, and you are a very wise man indeed. I put the indeed in there. That was not there. Sorry.
You're making it worse, bro.
I know. They go on to say, I think Amanda did such an amazing job on Sabbath and was so good on the podcast.
Yeah.
I personally started a prayer journal, not much for myself, but I love the intercessory prayer. So I will put prayer requests for other people and I'll follow up with them at a later time and ask how such things went. When they say, oh, I haven't thought about that in a long time, God answered their prayers how it was supposed to. Then it's not me asking for prayers for myself because I feel like it sometimes becomes very transactional. I often say, let me see that answer that I'm supposed to see and accept it. And when kids ask for something but they don't get the answer they want, they ask again and again. I ask that I hear the answer and be okay. Hurry is the enemy of our spiritual life in our day. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. This was a great takeaway from Sabbath and on the podcast. You touched on the instant gratification, how we are all yearning for it. I resonate with this. Until next week, the mysterious podcast listener.
Nice.
So there you go.
Ooh.
Amanda did, and Amanda, you know, did do a, I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen.
Yeah, I listened. It was great. She did a great job.
She did a great job. And so we had, I've had
Ken, I guess you and I can go away more often.
Exactly.
Amanda can.
No, please.
Well, Melanie, you need to stay. Ken, you can go.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
well,
fair.
No, because
I'm headed out.
You always tell the boss.
I'm leaving right
you
now.
You always tell the boss, look, if you need the day off, you take the day off. That's all I'm saying. I mean, not that we don't want and love you here. I'm just saying, Melanie has to stay. She's not the boss. Well, not of me anyway.
I'm the boss of you. Don't ruin my illusion, Randy.
Randy really has that shovel, and he is digging.
It is Tuesday morning. Come on, let's all shovel together, shall we? Or half or Lucas. One shovel, Randy, and half or Lucas. Here we go. There's fun to be had yet. So my question was, after the intro and getting started in the sermon, was how long does it take for Ken to preach a sermon? And you know what I found out the answer was?
What?
It depends. sorry. You haven't heard the message, have you?
No, I haven't heard it. But
it'll make more sense when you've had a chance to go back.
I think maybe I picked up on the joke.
Maybe you should explain it not just to Melanie, but to those who are sitting in their car right now, gripping their steering wheel tightly, feeling rage that they don't understand your inside joke.
And for those of you who haven't caught the message, Ken set everybody up in the worship room, I don't know, at least 6 or 7 times with, you know, according to Google, how much of the earth is covered by water and, you know, how much of your body is made up of water. And every time people are putting out even the correct answer, he's like, well, it depends. And it was just, I don't know. Was it the week off? You were on fire on Saturday.
I was extra spicy.
You were all over. We were left. We were upstairs. And we were like, wow, Ken is just like, he's got both of them out. Just.
I might have to go watch this.
Oh, it was. I've listened to it twice.
Wow, I'm sorry.
And it was fun. It was. Ken was smiling. People were enjoying. They were following him. And so that's
new. Melanie wasn't here to correct me. So
he was having so much fun.
I didn't have to worry about that. So I was feeling pretty great. Oh, man. And I would like to point out that I actually preached within my time limit without her being. So I feel like, Melanie, if you want me to hit my time limits, you just need to not be here. Never mind. I take that back. I will.
But the issue is, Ken, now I know you
can do it.
That's... He looks so much less enthusiastic about this coming week.
No. Not feeling happy now.
All right. So question for everyone. Everybody here swim?
I do.
Yes. Yeah?
Yep. All right. We have 4 swimmers. Okay. Just checking. Mom, sorry. Yeah. My mom's like Ken's mom, doesn't swim. And I've always felt bad that I was like, oh, I felt bad for your mom for a little bit there because, you know, I was like, mom sits alongside the pool and watches everybody else have fun. Like, nah, it's not really any fun for me because I don't know how to swim. And I'm like, bummer. Also, how many people look at water And while we, for those that swim or maybe do water sports or whatever, we enjoy it. And then there's someone who's just looking at that same bit of water going, how little the difference, how little that difference is. And even for maybe like bad ideas, we like it enough that bad ideas are on the table. So I was wondering if the podcast is a safe enough space for the rest of the fall story. Was there more to the story? Seemed like there was a little left there. Yeehaw on your behind. Is there more to that story that, you know, that we can share? Have we covered it?
I think we kind of covered it. Okay. I mean, it was the Bust Your Bottom Falls.
Bust Your Bottom Falls. That's right.
Which may or may not be exactly the exact name of the place. I remember the first time I saw it, it was just, I could not believe that people would actually ride down this thing. Because really what the pictures didn't capture is that there is an actual drop off on both sides. You really do need to kind of ride the middle if you don't want really horrible things to happen to you. And again, the amount of water coming off that falls really makes a difference. When there's not a lot of water, it hurts going down that thing. And I can only imagine, because it hurt as a teenager, so I can't imagine now as a 50-year-old man what that would do to me.
Air flight.
And the other part about it is it was really funny, because after first service, I ran into, I think it's safe to say the name, I ran into Jake, one of our church members, and he's from Western North Carolina, and he said—
Really?
He goes, man, now I do believe you're from there. That was a deep cut. He goes, only really people from Western North Carolina know about those two falls. And yeah, they're amazing. I was like, he's significantly younger than me. I was like, oh, you've been there. He's like, yeah, yeah, definitely. So he and his friends have been there. And I wasn't sure if they were still allowing people over there, because I— at one point, I heard that it was on private property and that the owners, understandably, weren't thrilled about a bunch of drunk rednecks hanging at the top of their waterfall doing. But yeah, the first time I got there, there was a bunch of drunk rednecks at the top of the more they drank, the stupider the stuff they want. First, it was going down backwards, then it was they tried to stand up going down it. And backwards, no.
No, but that really puts your head in some precarious positions.
But, you know, no brain, no pain.
That's it. So, that's it. Or at least if it's muted, it's just like, it'll be fine.
But it's an incredible waterfall to ride down. And, you know, Randy, if you sweet talk me in a week or two when we're up there.
I'm looking at you. Do you think a canoe could make it over?
No.
How big is it? Is it like a 3 or a 4, like rapids?
It's a waterfall. It's probably 100 yards long.
Lucas, bring the camera.
Yes, man.
It's a rock.
We're going to get this.
Yes. I mean, I guess if there was enough water, maybe you could.
You got to shoot it fast, right?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, because it's not straight down. It's at maybe a 45-degree angle. And so you gotta, and it's not really, usually there's just enough water that you can, there's maybe an inch or two of water.
Just enough to keep you moving.
Yeah. Hmm. So, well, you know, I don't know, but I imagine you could go over Turtle Falls.
Give it a try.
Turtle Falls is about 8 feet high.
Oh yeah. You can make that.
About an 8-foot drop. I know you could do it in a kayak.
Yeah.
But again, the big danger is that there is that kind of sheer rock wall straight ahead.
That hurts.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's been a while since I've been there, so I can't remember how far away from the edge of the falls that sheer rock wall is. But it was close enough that I got stuck underneath it.
I've been there with you. Yeah. Yeah. So, but the canoe.
I didn't sense you there when I was.
No.
Maybe you're the one who pushed me out, and I just didn't know.
But we're kindred spirits that way, because canoes will go over falls.
Yeah.
Number 3 rapids in Wisconsin. It's called Monastery Falls.
Okay.
And Pathfinder leaders. I'm pretty sure he lost about 5 years off of his life.
Yeah, I bet.
And so my brother's.
How old were you?
Probably 13, 14. My brother's father-in-law.
Yeah, he lost at least 5 years.
Oh, probably. And he's like, why are they all getting out of the canoes? He's like, I bet we can make it. We're in a 17-foot Grumman, you know, just standard aluminum canoe. He's like, I'm sure we can make it. He's like, if you get towards the middle, we'll keep the front end up. And then we should make it past the first drop. And as long as we hit that, we're golden. So I was like, sure, yeah, let's do it. And so as the last people are standing on the top, we're rowing on past. The other problem is there's not much time to steer when you're going down number three rapids.
And even with two oars.
Even with two oars and two idiots. And when the rock wall that you see upcoming, as you lean to the right, thinking like that's going to somehow steer you. And when you hit it, and then it launches you into the rock. And then immediately sinks the canoe to the bottom of the falls in that stage. So there was a drop and then another drop. So we had to get outside of the canoe and try to pull it out, which actually—
How deep was the water?
Huh?
How deep was the water?
Chest deep. Okay. And it was on the bottom. So, I mean, it wasn't coming out.
No.
It torqued the canoe. Well, and the triple ribbing in the front, always that canoe leaked for years. Ever after that, it leaked.
No kidding.
And it was torqued. But when we tried to get the canoe out, all of a sudden it took off and it grabbed my life jacket. It was dangling. I didn't have it zipped up.
Yeah.
And it grabbed it and it took me with it. And it left me underneath the falls like Ken. So as you're sitting there going, when you're underneath it, there was no shelf. This one, unfortunately, was I could look up and see everybody trying to put oars down. But I was on my back with my feet towards the top of the falls. No. And you could just see the water pouring over you. And I couldn't get out.
Yeah.
I was pushing my feet against a rock. And then apparently God decided, because I'll let you guys all off the hook. I made it.
Yeah.
That was another.
Spoiler alert.
That was just Ken. It's like, look, guys, it's okay. I'm here. I made it.
You know how this is.
You know this is. It was so good. And so, and then it was just like you feel like you're running out of air. And as you finally pop up downstream and you just float, of course, the Pathfinder leader thought I was dead, as probably everybody else did. But it was, you know, I think my mom made me go get a tetanus shot because my fingers were all bloody in my knees because I was trying to grab rocks on the way down and the scrape across the bottom.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I was like, Ken and I have been underneath the same, well, not the same falls, but
same idea.
Kind of fun.
Yeah.
Whatever
you survive is good.
That's it. So we all swim, obviously. A couple of us have been down some falls. Anyone else been near death in water? No.
Nah.
Anytime you're in water, you're near death. I mean,
you've been to New Smyrna Beach, right?
Pretty much any body of water in Florida. It's either a brain-eating amoeba or a gator.
That's it.
I swam the half fireman.
Yeah.
I almost died in that, but...
Not water.
Yeah, it's water.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
In where?
The half Ironman.
He did a half Ironman.
Yeah. Oh, well,
what's that? Yeah. That's a 1.2,
I think.
Because the regular is like over two. Right?
Yeah, no, the regular is too much.
Yeah, that's a good swim.
Yeah,
open water. That's a whole lot smarter than going down in the waterfalls.
Probably not. It's a nice experience.
Yeah. That's not. I mean, you could go out and swim that today. It would just take you a while.
Yeah, it'd take you a while. Melanie.
Yeah, I don't have anything nearly as impressive as that, so I'm just going to sit here amazed.
You don't have a brother that tried to baptize you and drown you? Or?
Well, no, that happened multiple times.
That counts.
Okay,
that counts. Death by siblings. So as we get back to the message in creation, water was already here, right? Because it doesn't say that he created water, but water was here.
Well, it implies that in verse 1, he says that in the beginning, God created the heavens, earth, and all that in them is. So at some point, God created water, but it doesn't, there is no mention during the 6 days of creation of water being created.
Better explanation. Thank you. Because it doesn't say that at creation was the beginning, right? I mean, is that implied or?
Well, it depends on which theological school of thought you're from. There are those who do believe that that everything in the universe was created during this 6 days of creation, right during that time period. And I'm not sure. I haven't really heard how they explain the water part of it.
But, yeah. That's all.
And then there's others that believe that God created prior to our Earth's creation, and that the Genesis 1 and 2 accounts are basically of the creation of our world, not necessarily the universe.
That's kind of how I think about it. Okay. But whether that's right or wrong, Melanie's, her head is kind of going up and down, but kind of side to side. So I'm not
she's,
sure.
She's just nodding that you're speaking. Yes.
I'm listening.
It's like the dog. It's like the 1970s furry dogs in the back window with the head that would bobble just real slow as you drove along. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, I'll just throw in there that, you know, it is very, very poetic language. So it's probably not like the secret to all origin of all life contained in a few verses. That's all I'll say.
Even with an Adventist theology, there's the thought within Adventism is that there were angels prior to creation. One of the things that Ellen, I think, said, and I shouldn't say thing, I'm quite certain, was that one of the reasons that Lucifer rebelled was because he wasn't included with in the Trinity in the creation of the world, that he couldn't understand why Jesus got to be a part of it and he didn't. And so that implies that God had created, at least from an Adventist theological thought, that there was creation prior to the world being our world being created. And I think that what's problematic is if you do take the approach that everything that was created during this 6-day period, you have a real problem on your hands with the water having the Spirit of God hovering over the water, because it doesn't say the Spirit of God created the water. It says that the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And also later on, it says that God brought dry land up out of the water. And so it again implies that there is some stuff there. And I think Christians would do themselves a favor to kind of hold on loosely to this one, because it's kind of like back in the Middle Ages when there was the suggestion that that the Earth was the center of the universe, the suggestion that that the sun orbited the Earth. There are all these different suggestions and out there that the world was flat because the Bible says so. And no, well, last time I checked, it was not flat. So just having traveled around it, having seen the curvature of the Earth for myself, I tend to take that one and believe it. Anyway, so point being, I think that when you look at the fact that there is water in Genesis 1, verse 2, there's already water here, I think, and that apparently God brings up earth out of there. That I think it actually helps out a little bit when you find rocks that are billions of years old. You go, okay, well, I mean, that doesn't contradict the Bible, really. I mean,
right.
Who knows when everything really began.
But God's always been here, right?
Yeah.
Always. So there had to be something yet, or was it just God and the Trinity and whatever, just hanging out like, wow, if only we had the ability to create something fun for ourselves to do or a place for us to go to. I mean, I'd like to vacation. Sabbath would be nice to go for a walk somewhere, but no, we're just sitting here floating through space.
And we're in a big hurry being eternal beings, so let's hurry and get it all done in 6 days.
now we're treading into dangerous waters, Melanie.
I wasn't going to go there, but go ahead. No, I mean, but seriously, like I've always, reading the story, it's always, to me, kind of been like, what you said, though. Like, I'm a little bored today. I really do think we should have some people around us that we could hang out with, we could go for Sabbath walks together, we could have them over, they could have us over, this would be fun kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, you know that that clump of water and stuff over there, you know, we haven't done anything with that, really. I just wasn't sure where I was going to go with it, but now I think I know what I'm going to do with it. And then we have the creation story, and yeah,
there's a lot of mystery out there. I mean, it's trying to understand how an eternal God, no beginning, no end,
there is
an all-knowing God, a God that's able to see the future and the past, that's not confined to time like we are. There's a lot of mystery to be had out there, and that's why I think we should probably be a little bit humble with trying to have the answer for everything.
Yeah.
I think like Job, God might be like, I don't think you were around when I did all that stuff, so maybe you just want to go ahead and be a little bit more have a little bit more humility. And then for people like me who really genuinely do believe that God did create the world in six literal days and with the seventh day for rest, I think we have to be humble in our opinion, and we have to also, but I think that if there is a truly God that is outside of the things that we can understand, then why is it impossible for him to do something like that in six days, which, you know, why not? So I think, I think it's one of the things where I wish people would be a lot more humble, a lot more interested in exploring and thinking and being kind. And I've heard people, you know, I think that one of the reasons Seventh-day Adventists start feeling a little uptight when there's any suggestion that we could talk about anything other than this is because of our theology of the Sabbath, that the world was needed to be created in six literal days because the seventh day is a literal day and we take a day of rest. And I had a friend who was Seventh-day Adventist in a different part of the world, not here in Orlando, who was one that believed that the world was created over periods of time, that there was basically six periods of time, not literal days. Okay. Maybe it was millions of years. That was his take on it. And I said, well, how do you then justify the Sabbath and like keeping the Sabbath? What, I mean, how do you do that? Because if it's created over millennia, what does it matter? I mean, you know, just take a day of rest and
pick one.
And he said, well, there's two different aspects to it for me. He said, firstly, I read in the Old Testament, and he said, I see Jesus do it in the New Testament, where Jesus takes Sabbath on the seventh day. And so for me, that's one good reason just to do that. So the second thing he said that's fascinating to me is in the Old Testament, it talks about how we'll be observing Sabbath in heaven. There's an allusion to keeping the Sabbath in heaven. And he said, so for me, if we're going to do it in heaven, then probably ought to do it here. And that's what makes sense to him. And I thought, well, I never really thought about that rationale before. And so there's a lot of really good people out there who are trying to think deeply. They want to be God-honoring. They want to do what God wants them to do. And they also want to think and think things through. And like I said, for me, as somebody who does believe in a six literal days of creation, I love having discussions with people who have different opinions. I think iron sharpens iron. And it's interesting to think through and say, okay, well, why do I think this and why do they think that?
God could have blinked it into existence and just was like, oh, now we're done.
Well, literally, so, the Bible says he spoke it into existence. Right. So, yeah, I mean.
So 7 days, like, doesn't bother me, nor does it prohibit me from liking to think that maybe it was more. Maybe that was a, who knows? And either way, but I like what he said about, you know, if you're going to do it in heaven and if you're following what Jesus was doing, those are two pretty good reasons to go about that and think about that in a different way. I love how the fact that the message just kept kind of coming back to God puts everything in its right place, everything in order. And I'm like, wow, if I could just get good at putting a couple things that I seem to lose on a pretty regular basis, like my AirPods, everything in the right place. And then to think about it on a global scale, and then think about it on the heavenly scale and the stars and the galaxies and the things that he's created that we don't even know anything about. Just thinking about that, again, maybe just taking the license to think a little, dream a little, what might God be like, someone who has no beginning, has no end, things that we just don't comprehend. And to think that even with us, that he does that same thing when he's got plenty of time, like Melanie said, what are we in a rush for? We got all the time that there could possibly be. But yet he stops and takes that time somehow. And being in tune with him, making things in the right place and everything in order. That was just I don't know why that just stuck out as a very humbling moment. Just to think about, and we know that God does all kinds of amazing things and can do amazing things, but that one just kind of hit home as a takeaway, like, he's busy, I'm sure, got lots to do. And it's like, hey, Randy, you know, we need to get this in the right place. And if you put this in order, things will be better. And can't say usually, I have to say he's right, you know, all the time. So And then the Four Rivers in the Garden. I got confused. So help me with the Eden Lost, Eden Redone. In there, I took a tour, but it wasn't with you. I don't know where I went, but it was not on the same boat.
Okay,
so on the water, get it? See,
right, gotcha. Yeah, all in you. Fine, good. Thanks. So Genesis 2 talks about a garden flowing out. A river flowing out of the Garden of Eden that splits into four branches there, and I will not be able to remember all their names. One is the Tigris. One is, I think, the Euphrates. I think one is the Pishon, or I don't know if that's the right way, but Pishon, I do believe. And I'm forgetting the fourth. Does anybody remember that?
I don't remember.
I don't remember the fourth.
They basically flow in four different directions. And so you kind of look at your compass points, northeast, southwest, you know, and basically there's this idea that these rivers go out and water the earth. And later on in Genesis, we're going to see that the writer says that before the flood, that there was no rain, that basically the water would rise up out of the ground and water, a mist would come up every evening and then it would go back down. And then there was these rivers that became the method of water being.
And these are literal rivers, right? Do we believe?
Well, that depends on how you read the Bible. I believe that they are literal. There are those who believe that it's more metaphorical. But there does seem to be some indication that there were these ancient rivers. I mean, we still have the Tigris. We still have the Euphrates.
Right.
The other two are a little bit more lost to history and where these might have been. So, yeah. So this is this idea that out of the garden flows this life that gives life to the rest of the world. And so when you return to Revelation chapter 22, or is it 21?
22.
Is it 22? Basically, John, as he's describing the new heaven and the new earth, he records that flowing from the throne of God is this massive river. And it flow. It doesn't talk about it dividing to four, though. It just says that this massive river flows out from the throne of God, and on the banks of this river grow the trees of life that produce fruit. Talks about how the leaves are for the healing of the nations, and this tree of life produces fruit that gives life. So again, it does appear that the Revelator is referencing back to that first Eden in Genesis and saying basically God comes in and in the new heaven and new earth, he recreates what was destroyed because of sin.
It made me think about, what would it be, 2 years ago when John Rivers was our guest speaker at Church Retreat. And I believe on the podcast, you can go back and find that in the archives, but he talked about that's how they named Four Rivers his barbecue sauce to start with was from Revelation. And I believe he did connect that in a pretty cool way on the show. So you might want to go check that out just as if you're like, hey, I need a little bit more of you guys in my life, which who doesn't, then that's probably a good place to start. So Lucas, did we have questions today?
Yes, we got three questions. So the first one was from Charlene Holt. And the question was, when Jesus called Peter to walk on the water, would this represent the water as faith?
The water as faith? Is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah.
Water as faith.
I don't think so. In my personal opinion, if you were looking at that story metaphorically, you're going to see the water as chaos. There's a storm. Jesus is walking on these stormy waters. And generally stormy waters in the Bible, generally, if they're being used as a metaphor, they're being used to describe chaos, the uncontrollability of life. If you've ever been out on a stormy sea or a stormy lake, you know that you really don't have much control over what's happening. It's pretty terrifying, actually. And so metaphorically, the water would probably represent chaos if you were looking at the story through that lens. And so basically, Peter requests to Jesus that in faith he walks through the chaos to Jesus. But the chaos is so overwhelming for Peter that he takes his eyes off of Jesus. And when he takes his eyes off of Jesus, he sinks into the chaos, into the water. and it's about ready to drown him. He doesn't know how he's going to survive it, and he yells out, "Help!" And the Bible says immediately, Jesus lifted him out of the water. Jesus' hand immediately that he grasped Peter and brings him up out of the water and stands him up on the water with him. And he says, "Why do you have so little faith?" to him, and basically encourages Peter to keep his eyes on Jesus. And so I think one of the really beautiful lessons of that story is that the chaos of life can be really overwhelming, and it is easy in those chaotic moments to let our eyes fall off of Jesus. And I think that sometimes in Christianity, we shame people when that happens. Why aren't you looking to Jesus? You know, why aren't you keeping your eyes on him? Well, because life is scary. Yeah. There's lightning, there's thunder, there's these massive waves. It's terrifying. And yeah, I know what I should be doing, but you know, when that huge wave comes crashing at you,
yeah,
it's easy to turn your head there for a second and instead of shaming people, maybe we ought to just remind them that if you do lose your sight on Jesus, you just have to cry out for help. Just cry out for help. And the other part, though, that I also wanted to emphasize, and actually I think there's some more questions coming up that maybe I actually want to make the next point on. So anyway, so to answer that question, no, I think the water metaphorically is going to be chaos, and Jesus is giving Peter the opportunity when he asked for it to exercise his faith by walking through that chaos to him.
Seems like water's always the chaos.
Mm.
Almost, you know, the going through the Red Sea, so many different things.
Yeah. Second question from Erin. Is the lever in front of the tabernacle in the Old Testament the symbol for the sea of glass? Because the lever is also called the sea, if I recall.
Erin, I'd never thought about that until I heard your question. That's a great question. I don't know the answer. Melanie, do you have any?
I don't.
The lever.
Laver.
Laver.
L-A-V-E-R.
Okay.
It was this huge bronze bowl that I can't remember the dimensions on it, but it was really large. And they called it the sea. And the priests would use the water from that for purifying rituals and water rituals. And so is that what I would say, Erin, is I'd have to look into it a little bit further. I'm going to guess that there isn't a definitive answer on that. I'm going to guess that it's one of those things that you can, you know, think through. And I think it's a very fascinating thing to think about, though.
Yeah. I would have never thought of that. Yeah. Nice job, Erin.
Yeah. I love that connection.
And the last question is from Tisinko. So many people expect that God will always resolve our chaos, but does God's presence in our chaos always remove the turmoil? Or is it possible that sometimes the spirit hovering and surrounding us may have to be enough?
Tisinko, great question as always. And so the answer to the final part is yes, I agree with you. I think sometimes the spirit hovering over the waters is going to need to be enough. And the other part that I would remind people of is that God does not speak all, whether you believe in a literal 6 days of creation or don't, the way the story goes is God does not create everything immediately. There is a period of time during which that creation happens. And there is a, for me, it's an evening to evening process that takes place. And so God does not immediately bring order out of the chaos. And I think sometimes in life, we really want God to bring order out of our chaos immediately. I think another thing to think about is that, you know, Christ died over 2,000 years ago, and we still live in a world of chaos. And God is still doing his work of bringing order. And there's some times where in my life it feels like there's more order, and there's some times where it feels like there's less order. And I think the point for all of us is to get a little less obsessed with God doing things on my timeline and a lot more trusting that God's spirit hovers over that chaos in my life, that God is there with me in that moment, and that as God sees fit, God will do his creative work, his work of reordering in his time and in his way. God didn't ask for any opinions when you read Genesis 1 on what order he did things in. There was a specific order that God did it in. fascinating to me. There's a book called The Genesis Enigma, where a kind of a secular scientist who kind of admits at the beginning that he has maybe moved towards agnostic out of being an atheist, but he says when he looks at the creation story, the order is correct from an evolutionary standpoint of how things would go. And he says why he calls it the Genesis Enigma is he said that it's correct based on our current scientific understanding. It would have not been made any sense to an ancient person, that order. They would have picked a different order from an ancient standpoint. So what kind of moved him out of maybe atheist towards agnostic was that how could these ancient people have known the correct order unless there was a greater being that inspired them in that way? And he talked about how much he didn't like thinking about that there was about that inspiration. But the point is, as God does his creative work, God knows the right order. And sometimes there's the order we think it needs to be in. And that's not at all the order that God chooses to do it in. And we need to trust God through the process. There's a lot of us who want God to fix this or fix that right now. And we think that's what needs to happen. And if you believe that God is a good father, spoiler for as we move into next week, if you believe that God is a faithful father, a good father, and not a bad dad, then you have to believe that God is doing things in the right way. And the beautiful part is it gives us the chance to believe in God's grace. It gives us the chance to believe that in spite of how flawed we are and the mistakes that we know that are happening in our life and the things that we wish weren't the way that they were, that God can work through that when we turn it over to him and we say, hey, you have permission to change it. In fact, I would love for you to change it. But if you're not changing it, I also know that your grace is sufficient for me.
Mm. Yeah. One question that I didn't get to, I actually forgot about, was how many words are there in the Bible for water? Like before translating, obviously, because then different.
How many different words are there in the original languages?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Just curious if anyone knew that as a part of what the words are that we would use to say water.
I don't know of multiple words for water. That doesn't mean they don't exist. I just...
I could...
But like,
I
mean, like Hebrew to...
Well, let me go ahead and give everybody their own little assignment. If you want to know, look up Strong's Concordance and look up the word water in it, and then you will see all the different words that are translated...
Strong's, okay.
That are translated into the English word water, and you can see all the different ancient words, both Greek and Hebrew,
okay,
and possibly Aramaic.
She concurs, I can tell. She only blinked twice, so she concurs.
I don't know. She wasn't quick on that affirmation there.
Well, I mean, I think there are other connections that you can make that are kind of interesting. The word for chaos in Genesis is a very similar word to the word that the ancients would have used for the goddess of chaos. So that's an interesting connection. I think, while we're talking about words, I think it's interesting that the word that also that's used in Hebrew to describe the spirit of God hovering over the water, the word actually has kind of the connotation of fluttering or even vibrating. Mm. So, I think that idea is metaphorical, but I think it's really interesting to think about a divine vibration or a divine rhythm and what that has to do with chaos and what vibration does to water. I think it's a really interesting metaphor to explore.
I think it's really interesting, especially considering what, research that is finally coming out again. I know Tesla had started it way back when, and about vibrations and about electrical, like ley lines that are naturally in the earth, different things that can put off different frequencies and how they are now finding they're affecting your everything from your mood to your health and different things like that. So maybe that is something to...
Well,
and
sound creates shapes. There's a
right. There's
a field called cymatics where, you know, they make different sounds and then they show what the shape is in the water. So that's another interesting thing.
Like the water and the rice. I think these that's really, really cool.
Yep.
Well, Ken finished up in talking about Revelation 22:17. Let anyone who desires drink freely from the water of life. Just, but really putting it on anyone. And, you know, as we think about ourselves as Christians, as Adventists, as a community here at Whole Life, and it was just that everyone is welcome, and that was a really nice way to finish everything off and think about putting this all kind of like you talked about earlier, putting everything in its place, putting everything in its order. And it just made me smile that that's where the right place and that's the order here at Whole Life. And I appreciate that a ton. Also, just want a quick shout out to Shanella, who got baptized this week, and Blake Tryon. We had a chance to do their baptism videos this week. And
speaking of water,
and both of them were a lot of fun to sit down with and be able to talk to. And so, you can, if you missed that, you can go to the homepage on the website and you'll find it there, or wholelife.church/wholelifestories, and you can see both of their videos.
Is it Whole Life Stories or just Stories?
Whole Life Stories.
Whole Life Stories.
And they are up, and you can go back all the way into 2024.
wholelife.church/wholelifestories. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Yeah, so you guys have started putting all the videos that we make for people who have joined through profession of faith or gotten baptized.
Since we started doing the videos here in house,
right,
we have all of those done, and so now I need to get with Stanley, who used to do them for us, and I need to get some of the files so that we can upload the others and start building back, because we're into 2024 now,
right,
on the webpage. And so it's a really nice way to just take, even from just looking at the faces, oh, these are newer people.
And some of them are actually a longer version of the original, right?
There's a few that are a little bit longer than the originals that you see.
Because we only have like about a minute to 2 minutes to tell a story inside of our worship service. But some of them have such fascinating stories that you've actually let this story go a little bit longer on the website.
There's a handful. I mean, you know, mostly not everyone. Well, I should say most people don't like to be in front of the camera. They walk and they go, ooh, I didn't think there was going to be a camera and lights. And it's like, well, yes, this is true. So, you know, not everyone has a lot to say past what they just need to say to let everyone know why they love Jesus and why they're taking this next super important step in their spiritual journey. But others do have a little bit more to say. And so if we can work it in where it makes sense, we do, and you'll find them there. So,
that's awesome.
All right. So it begins with water, ends with water. And this week, I think you kind of alluded to it.
Talking about the flood next week.
The flood.
Yeah. Father's Day sermon on faithful father or bad dad.
I can't wait to see Noah.
Yeah.
I mean,
literally.
Jesus, well, a virtual AI Jesus welcomed us this week online to come and see about the water. And so I can't wait to see what
Noah's
going
to do. Are we having Noah talk to Whole Life?
Yes, we are.
Noah's going to talk to Whole Life this week.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
These Bible characters, we're bringing them back.
Yeah.
In the best way we know how. The only way we know how, kind of. So it's also just really, really fun. I heard from a couple of people who were just like, the creativity and just the idea that, you know, we talk to Jesus, we pray, we do all this, and you don't get that physical, I see you and I feel you kind of thing, but this kind of gives you a little bit.
You don't see Jesus doing 60-ish, do you? But well, there we go.
If that's going to cost us an extra $1,200, we're at time limit for what comes for free, Ken.
Oh, no.
So if we want someone to do a Bible character to do 60-ish, it's going to cost
us. We can have multiple characters.
they'd have to keep, you know.
I loved it. Somebody came up to me and said, I don't recognize the actor you guys got to play Jesus. Who is that?
I don't either.
So, I don't, well, it's
he lives somewhere in the cyber world. But anyway, I enjoyed it too. When Lucas showed it to me, I was like, this is so much.
So cool.
So much fun, and so fun to even just imagine Jesus, you know, welcoming people the whole life. That was very, very cool. So anyway, guys, thank you for listening, and check out the baptism page, and man, have a great week.